Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Mikasa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. And we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today, my treat is that we are going to take you to a vision of the Coastal Dance Festival. We have three members from the Coastal Dance Festival. And just before that, Jesse is going to give our land acknowledgement and also connect that to the Coastal Dance Festival.
Thanks, Charlotte. Today's show is being produced and broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilamen Squamish-speaking peoples. As the first and original storytellers on these lands, we honor the works and words of its first peoples and are honored to share and uplift their legacy through our work in community radio.
We're looking at how this festival is a connecting. It's very different because it seems that you're bringing in indigenous groups and culture from across the country. Margaret Grenier is the festival director, but also the executive and artistic director of Dancers of Damala. Wait, now I mispronounced that. Could you pronounce it for me properly?
Yes, it's the Dancers of Damla Hamid.
Okay. Would you give us an overview of this festival? As the director, you're the director, the artistic director, the genius, it seems, to be trying this 18th year of the festival.
It is the 18th year. The Coastal Dance Festival started in 2008, and at that time, it was through the Cultural Olympiad celebrations here in Vancouver. But there's a predecessor to the festival that started in the 1960s, and that was in the city of Prince Rupert on the northern coast of BC. And at that time, the festival was focused on the revitalization of Indigenous dance practices here on the West Coast following the lifting of the potlatch ban. And so in 2008, we wanted to continue the legacy of the festival and recreate a space that celebrated Indigenous dance traditions from throughout the Northwest Coast, and also inviting Indigenous artists from other parts of Turtle Island, as well as international artists as well.
So who are some of the artists that have been invited and are participating in this year's festival here?
Well, we have a community of artists as part of our festival. So we have some artists that are returning, representing our local territories, as well as other parts of the coast. So we're very honored to have a number of artists, including Chinook Songcatchers, Rainbow Creek dancers, as well as the Eagle Song dancers and the Gitxaun dancers and Gitxaysk dancers, Yisawen youth from Vancouver Island. So quite a diversity of artists that are returning as well. This year, we are going to be at the Museum of Anthropology again. It's a space that we haven't been returning to for the last 8 years. And there we're going to be this year inviting a group of artists to be part of our artist sharing series, which will include international artists, Joe Clancy of Waigana Dancers from Australia, and Charles Coronio, an Indigenous artist from New Zealand.
So tell us a bit about what's happening at the Museum of Anthropology and what's happening at some of the other locations. And are there days, it's reading about it, it seems like there are some days where it's like a workshopping or a sharing between dance groups, but then is the public also invited to those activities?
Yes, there are, everything is public events. So we have the first 3 days of the festival, March 4, 5, and 6, that'll be at the Museum of Anthropology. We'll have all ages matinees during the day at 11 and 1 p.m. each day. And those are for both schools as well as anyone who comes to the museum with regular museum admission. At 3 p.m. each day, we are going to have our artist sharing series, which are panel conversations with some of our artists, and that will also be with museum admission.
Will the public be able to sit in on those panels, or will the panels just be mostly members of groups, dance groups here?
Oh, yes. No, the public is able to sit in on the panels, and there's no ticketing for them. You can attend just with general museum admission, and they will be in the museum gallery spaces. And then we'll also have in the Haida House, which is a space just as part of the museum, but just outside of the main museum building, we're going to have an installation this year, which will be a durational performance, and that will be with artist Charles Coronijo. The only events that are ticketed are the evening events, and on March 4th and 5th in the evening, we are going to transform the Great Hall of the museum space with lighting, and that those evenings will feature artists, Waigana dancers, as well as Laura Grizzly Paws, and our company, the Dancers of Dam Muhammad, will also be presenting on those evenings. And then on Friday, we move over to the Anvil Center, which is out in New Westminster. And that is going to start on the Friday with school performances, another all ages matinee. And then the afternoons at the Anvil Center are all free by donation. And that's our festival stage performances. And then the Saturday evening at the Anvil Center will also be a ticketed evening event.
It feels like around the world. Can you tell me the ways that you work together in creating this festival and dividing up your labor? It seems like it's different than a lot of companies where the people aren't related or the people are even from different fields. How does it work with you? How do you bring your creativity together harmoniously for such a magnanimous program?
Well, we are a family. We are an intergenerational practice. Our company started under the leadership of my parents, and then my husband, Andrew, who is on the call as well, and I took over in 2008. So the festival was really a vision that was carried forward by our family. And Rebecca, who is also my daughter-in-law, is also the artistic associate with the festival. So as a family, we work together, and maybe Rebecca and Andy can speak a little bit about their roles.
Yes, I'd love to hear that. I'm sure our listeners too, because, you know, so much of a lot of things show drama and confusion in families, and you have cohesion and tradition. So, yes, tell us a little bit about how that connects with your life purpose and having such an excellent result.
I am the artistic associate for the dance festival, and I think what makes it really unique in terms of how we work together is just really the common understanding of the purpose and why we do it. Everything that we do is to learn our culture and to maintain it and to pass it on to the next generation. And for the festival, it's really about cultivating a space for other communities and other families and dance groups and artists to come together and share a little bit of where they're from and to practice their dances and their songs. So I think when you have that common understanding and share that goal as Indigenous people, that it makes it quite easy in the sense that you do it out of the love for the next generations to come.
I think it's very brave to invite the public to come in. You don't have a preamble. You know, if you're coming to this, you have to do this and that. What has been your joy or your experience as you invite groups from across the country and also different parts of Vancouver to be involved?
I would say that the community is really the heart of the festival. Something that's different with our festival is that it's not just about sharing new dance works or, you know, really focusing on the specifics of what is being curated each year, but it's more about cultivating a community and really providing a space that inspires and supports our artists. Our artists all come from, you know, different stories. Some of our artists have gone through times in their communities when they have lost their dance traditions altogether and they have worked to bring them back. Others have a really, you know, deep dance lineage that goes back thousands of years and has remained unbroken. And so the festival is about bringing together both emerging and established artists, about really sharing with our audiences the strength of Indigenous dance. And because we have been around for 18 years now, you know, we've seen our youth grow up as part of the festival and then come into their own as young artists and beginning to take over roles of leadership and creating their own works as well.
And Gir's Golas seems to get Dimmy good and backed. And Gir's Golas and give added gent. It only takes the light of one young soul, and they will come. It only takes one small light to see the way.
And that widow Carlson.
Hey.
Andrew, how does this connect with your passion for theater as well as culture, intergenerational culture?
Yes, I've basically, my whole experience with Indigenous art has been around the festival, and I just love being able to facilitate a space where everybody can come and just be themselves. And I think what's unique about our company is that we're dancers ourselves. So when we present people the way we would like to be hosted. And I think that really provides a comfortable space for the artists to really express themselves. And it also creates a beautiful space for non-Indigenous people to come and witness all the cultures of the West Coast that, you know, are so rich and vibrant, and to see that it's a living tradition, not something that's from long ago, which is what, you know, what you like to do at the museum is there's a lot of artifacts, you know, ancient artifacts there, but we try to bring the museum alive and make it create a space of cultures that are moving forward into the future.
Yes, I've seen the exhibition at the museum, and you're right, without people there from the cultures or people to talk with people while they're watching it, you might just look at it like you look at everything else, but it seems to really provide a unique opportunity to immerse yourself and no more than just what might be on the placards. I know at the museum, they installed along some places in the wall, you can push a button and it tells you about a piece of art or it tells you about a particular period. But I think your presence there gives people an opportunity to talk directly and ask more questions rather than just hear a couple of minute recording. In terms of time, what amount of time does it take you in the course of from one year to the other to plan and prepare and connect all these dots that you have?
Well, for us, the artists that are part of the festival, they're really built from a network that grows organically. So while our preparations for the festival are really in the months and weeks leading up to the festival, we're always working to expand those connections. And the reason for that is that there's so much to learn from one another. So we have developed relationships not only with New Zealand and Australia as what is being shared this year, but down into to South America as well, with Indigenous artists from Norway and Sweden. And through all of this, I think we're not just, it's not just about sharing arts and our artistic practices, but also really, you know, finding a way forward together through our colonial histories, learning from one another, and together it becomes a process of healing and strengthening as well.
in doing the performance and interacting with the public, because in my mind I'm picturing there are people on stage, but then there are also people in the audience. So one year people ask, how should people dress, you know, that are coming to the festival, if they want to feel connected? Are there places that they can buy anything to wear, or what would you suggest that somebody wants to come and feel like they're participating but don't want to feel like they are improperly dressed or not in connection with what's happening?
There's certainly a lot of symbolism that we carry with everything that we wear when we share through song and dance. And you see that reflected in the audience as well. You know, there's so many Indigenous people that don't have those strong connections to their practices of song and dance. And so, coming to an event like the Coastal Dance Festival allows for, you know, connections to their own communities, or, you know, to a practice that maybe they can only access as an audience member. So I think that because the festival really is a festival where we celebrate our identities, the diversity of Indigenous peoples. That's also reflected in our audiences. So I don't think there's anyone who comes to the festival that may not feel comfortable in terms of their appearance or how they've chosen to dress, because I think it's a very inclusive environment, and we can see that and you know, we have families, children, elders, so it's a very comfortable place for people to just come as they are.
I think your question brings up the question of appropriation versus appreciation also, which is a big conversation within the community of non-Indigenous people. And I think it's important that people feel like they can support Indigenous artists through, you know, what they decide to buy, what they decide to wear, and making sure that those items are made by Indigenous people and who have the right to create those pieces.
And we also have, as part of our, on the weekend at the festival stage at the Anvil Center, we have invited members of the community as well, who will be sharing their art and setting up tables, and there's an opportunity for audience members as well to be able to see what they have to offer and what works they're doing. Some are more contemporary, and some works are more traditional as well in that way.
I see. So at the Anvil Center, will there be tables or areas where people can buy artifacts or clothing or musical instruments?
Yes, we do have a few vendors that will be coming to sell various artworks, jewelry, clothing, and we really look forward to that, because there's some quite special pieces that people might be able to see and purchase. And I just want to make note that I do have to go, unfortunately.
Well, I want to thank you for spending time with us. It's exciting looking forward to it and seeing the manifestation of what sounds like just a beautiful, it was so unique. So thank you for spending the time, and thank you for the ways that you have helped connect the generations with this festival.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask, in your design and laying out this festival, it seems like packets and packets. I just see mail and letter. How do you, over the course of the from one festival to the other, how do you keep in touch with people or keep people's excitement or way of hearing the ideas that other people are bringing? People who might have been in before, how do they let you know what they're planning, or how do you let them know what your vision is as the festival director?
I think that it's very much a community where it's very, you know, there's a lot of sharing amongst ourselves and the artists that takes place, and it's very responsive to one another in that way. I think what's really important is that it needs to be the voices of the artists that come forward with the festival each year, and that it could never be imposed on the artists. So there's always changes that happen when you have a practice that goes from generation to generation. There's changes in families, there's changes in communities. You know, our artists are sometimes during the festival time, you know, where they have experienced grief or loss of elders, or, you know, where there's a reflection of younger family members who are, you know, stepping into stronger roles. And you can see that each year at the festival. And so I think that the way that the festival is curated is very much responsive to the changes that are taking place in each of our communities. There it's also responsive to the innovation of our artists. I think when our festival first started 18 years ago, you know, there was a real gap between traditional practice and contemporary practices. And I think that that has shifted over time, and you can see innovation that's taking place within traditional practices. You can see contemporary practices that are really drawing from traditions and ancestral knowledge in a way that hasn't been done before. And so I think that when we curate the festival, we're really trying to provide a safe space, a comfortable space where artists have the ability to, you know, be able to share where they are at this time and place, and knowing that, you know, these practices are always changing, and what will be shared in a few years will look differently, and that's what carries the festival forward.
Taking a moment to remind our listeners, this is the Suluau Show, where my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and apply what you've heard. We are talking today about the 18th annual Coastal Dance Festival and how it brings together Indigenous artists to share and support one another in a celebration of lived artistic practices. Andrew, could you describe a couple of lived artistic practices that people will see through the festival, through any parts of the festival?
Sure. I think one of the signature things of the West Coast dances is the masks that people dance. And so definitely our festival showcases a lot of amazing artists. A lot of the dance group leaders are carvers themselves. And so you'll see many, many masks on being performed throughout the festival, and as well as all kinds of other regalia as well. So people... A lot of these visual artists carve masks, but there's also a lot of, as Rebecca had said, a lot of beautiful regalia. So what people wear have a lot of designs on them. There's a type of design on the Northwest Coast that's been dubbed form line design. And so all of the regalia that everyone wears has these crests that belong to their families, and those are sewn onto the regalia. So you'll see beautiful, colorful regalia and a lot of masks, many of which have moving parts. And so you'll see masks where the eyes or the tongues or the different parts of the masks move. And sometimes there's puppets, and it's quite a visual art practice. So you'll see a lot of amazing artistry on stage. It's not just song, it's not just dance, it's also artist, you know, visual arts and story all combined into a performance.
Can you walk us through, I know on the website there are a lot of different things that are there, but can you day by day walk us through some of the things that are highlights of that particular day?
Well, the festival has a few different focuses. During the daytime, we really focus on our youth. So the matinee performances and the afternoon performances on the weekend all will really focus on family audiences and are accessible. They're not ticketed. Our evening performances are ticketed, and they're going to take place Tuesday of March 4th and Wednesday, March 5th. Our evening performances are going to take place in the Great Hall of the Museum of Anthropology. And we will transform the space so that it's not a theater setting, but that it's, you know, contains elements of a theater setting, and that there's staging and lighting in the space. And then on the Saturday, we will also have another evening ticketed event, and that performance will be in the theater at the Anvil Center in New Westminster. One thing that is new to the festival this year is that we are going to be taking place, the festival will be taking place at two venues. So the first 3 days will be at the Museum of Anthropology at UBC, and Friday through Sunday will be at the Anvil Center in New Westminster. When we're at UBC, we're going to have our artist sharing series. So every afternoon at 3 p.m. on March 4th, 5th, and 6th, we'll have a conversation with some of our artists. And this will be an opportunity to learn a little bit more about their practices coming from the voice of our artists. Also how our practices are connected to land, how they're something that requires training and ancestral knowledge to develop and to strengthen these practices for today and moving forward. And then as well, as part of our artist sharing series, we're going to be doing the installation, which will take place daily throughout the whole festival. It'll be at the Museum of Anthropology in the afternoons, starting at 1 p.m. most days. And that is going to be a little bit different in that it's not, it's something where people can go into the space, which is called the Haida House, which is just the museum's grounds. And the space inside will be transformed through projection and imagery, as well as live performance. And it'll be reflecting the indigenous culture of the Maori artist Charles Corinijo. And through that, we're really trying to look at how we can not only bring our lived traditions into spaces like the museum, but what are some of the ways that we can begin to innovate in how we are deepening those relationships and expressing ourselves as Indigenous artists in these spaces.
Now, you said the daytime ones are non-ticketed.
That's correct. So when we're at the Museum of Anthropology, it's just you just need admission to the museum. There's no ticketing from the festival. And then when we're at the Anvil Center on Saturday and Sunday, March 8th and 9th, starting at 1 p.m. each day, the performances are free to the public. There's an opportunity to donate to the festival, but it's really intended to be a time that's accessible for all people to come and witness.
Well, it's so comprehensive. I don't know any other festival that I've heard of where you have full days or afternoons that are free or just open on the basis of a donation. It seems like a really great way, intentional way, to increase people's diversity or their knowledge of Indigenous and other cultures, to really just have a sharing session without having to worry about the cost.
And we see a lot of young families coming. You know, oftentimes when you have kids, it's expensive and, you know, it's hard to bring the whole family out to certain events. And so we really enjoy the little ones that come to watch. And the little ones really enjoy the performances, particularly all the masks. And it's a great all ages type of event where people from all ages and walks of life and cultures can come and witness and share in what we have to offer. So it's a wonderful opportunity, I think, for the community. And what we enjoy is that this year, for the first time, we're able to go to two venues. And so we're able to reach two very different communities, both in Vancouver and in New Westminster.
Yes, I think that is remarkable. And also the welcoming to families, because a lot of times art galleries and so forth, I hear the word no or stop or don't touch or be still. And here it seems like it's going to be encouraging kids to feel comfortable in the space and not hearing that backdrop of don't or be careful or stop. Have you... in the past received accolades for the way that you involve and welcome young children to the art galleries or the performance center?
It's always been a really important part of our mandate to focus on youth and to encourage youth to be able to you know, to see the and experiences the songs and dances. And for me, the reason for that is that I think the impact that we can have on our young people is really important when it comes to understanding Indigenous culture, and having positive experiences with Indigenous song and dance, I think, really leaves an impact that I think will lead to changes in our society. All of the young people that come and they have an opportunity to enjoy, to not just experience it, but to be able to react, and you hear their laughter, or you hear their, you hear them when they're working out like what they are understanding from what they're seeing, and that carries with them. And so, what I hope from having that sort of impact on our youth is that as they grow up, there isn't that hesitation with Indigenous culture. I think that sometimes one of the things that can really carry a block between Indigenous communities and, you know, all of the communities that we have in this country is that, you know, there is a hesitation that comes from not having an understanding of Indigenous practices, of our languages, of our culture, of our arts. And the more that we can allow for spaces where it's comfortable, I think that, you know, we can move forward to begin to ask questions and to begin to build understanding and comfort and a more positive place for all of our children to grow up into. And it allows for our Indigenous children to feel pride in what they're sharing and who they are as Indigenous artists.
Yeah, I think the contact throughout the year within your group of working toward what's going to be presented the next year is one way of having kids that are in school, little kids see, oh, this is normal, this is acceptable, this is something that we can present, that people want to learn from us. I think that it is very, when you hear land acknowledgments or you hear different things, there's such a tiny tip of the iceberg about Indigenous culture, whereas you have got such a kaleidoscope, such a beautiful, varied pattern of things that over 1 week almost you are able to share, and that it's not just locally, that people will be taking it back to other places. Do you have, what are some of the other cities and communities that people are coming here from?
We have artists this year that will be coming from up in the Yukon, as well as some of our artists, like their home communities are in Alaska, Northern BC, Haida Gwaii, Vancouver Island, the northern part of Vancouver Island, as well as the, you know, the local territories surrounding the Vancouver area. We also have artists this year, as I mentioned, that are international artists coming from Sydney, Australia and Auckland, New Zealand. And as well, our family, the Dancers of Dam Muhammad, we will be sharing as well throughout the festival week, and our home, originally coming from Northern BC along the Skeena River area.
Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. Lu sex and good sim hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Dim e am tim will a dadil sim. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. Lu sex and good sim hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Dim e am dim, will a dad is a sim. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. Lu sex and good sim hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Dim e am dim, will a dad is a sim. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. Lu sex and good sim hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Dim e am sim, will a dad is a sim. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey ya. Yo ho hi, yo ho hi, yeah, hey ya, hey. sex and kutsim hayeya heya. Kim e am kim will I dadis a sim. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya heya. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya hey. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya heya. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya hey. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya heya. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya hey. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya heya. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya hey. Lu sex and kutsim ha yeya heya. Tim e am tim will a dadus a sim. Yo ho yo ho ha yeya heya. Yo ho ha yo ho ha yeya hey.
Hey-hee-hee-yo, hey-hee-hee-yay. Hey-hee-hee-yo, hey-hee-yay-hee-yo, ho-hee-yo. Hee-pai-kali-ba-sum, talk-ask-a-now. Goon-la-as-ex-we-hali-ba-sum, talk-ask-a-now. Hey-hee-hee-yo, hey-hee-hee-yay. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. He's walking out, sa sector at. Guess whisker now, Ali ba some talky Sydney. Hey he he yo, hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo. Hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. Hey he he yo. Hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. He by Kali ba sum talk ask a now. Goon la as ex we Ali ba sum talk ask a now. Hey he he yo, hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. He's walking out, sky sector at. Guess whisker now, Ali ba sum talky Sydney. Hey he he yo, hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. Hey he he yo, hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. He by Kali ba sum talk ask a now. Goon la as ex we Ali ba sum talk ask a now. Hey he he yo, hey he he yeah. Hey he he yo, hey he yeah he yo ho he yo. He's walking out, sa sector at.
guess whisker now. Holly Bossum Talky Sydney. Hey, he, yeah, he, yo, ho, he, yo.
How important do you see mentorship to be? And do you see this festival as a way that you are mentoring people from other parts of the country to do something similar?
Mentorship is an extremely important part of our practice. We are fortunate that we had elders in our lives who really instilled the foundational knowledge for these practices. There's something that we had the opportunity to grow up with, not only in terms of our songs and dances, but even just how to host a gathering such as this. I grew up as a young girl, a dancer in the festival that my parents hosted for nearly 20 years. And it was a place where, for me, I came to not only love the songs and the dances of my own community, but to really love the songs and the dances of the surrounding communities and to grow a connection for them. And I wanted to see that carried forward to today for the younger generations that are growing up and learning about their songs and their dances and their stories. And while we have many distinct cultures, we also have, you know, shared histories as well that aren't only from our recent past, but even historically, we have shared stories and connections from throughout the coast. And it's important that these are carried forward. So I think that's something that we have had a really strong response from, not only from our artists that are from this region, but artists that we've had that have come from Hawaii or anywhere around the Pacific Rim or, from other places, including Northern Europe in Norway and Sweden. Like, there aren't other festivals that are really hosted in the same way as the Coastal Dance Festival, where it's a festival that's run by artists and by families who have carried these songs and dances and stories for generations. And so it's a different way to host. It's a different way to gather. And I think that that's what's at the heart of the festival and really why the mentorship is such an important part of it. Our children are now growing into roles of leadership, and we're starting to see the very young children beginning to engage and be part of the practice. So that's really why we do the work, is to see how what we have learned from our parents and grandparents being carried forward to the next generations.
Do you feel, as a creative director, are there particular things that youth might ask you about or young men ask you about that they might not ask a woman about? Or do you have any particular insight on the willingness for younger people? Well, so much negative has been put out about programs for Indigenous people and stereotyping, but it takes a kind of boldness for people to persist in asking an elder or asking a parent or asking a friend to get involved in something like this program. How do you, as a creative director, deal with things like that?
I think what we're trying to do is, like Margaret said, through mentorship, I think we're trying to set examples for people. So, you know, one of the things about the festival, which is quite unique, is with regards to mentorship, is that not the performers are also youth. Like, it's an intergenerational dance practice. So not only will kids come to watch this performance, but there are children of all ages, from little babies right on up to elders, that are in the performances. And I think it's through that, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be an explicit way of teaching. I think people learn and pick up through just a daily practice. And I think that as a dance family, that's what groups refer to themselves as dance families.
Mm-hmm.
It provides the framework to transfer knowledge from one generation to the next. And so I think it's very much a learning by doing and a learning by example, teaching by example. I think that's what we're trying to facilitate with our dance family. And I think that has created an atmosphere that I think permeates the festival. I think it's a very good opportunity for people to live the culture, not just learn about the culture. I think it's more that way. And I think with regards to gender roles, one thing that's very much been instilled by our elders is that there isn't really a gender role in the families, with particularly with our family. You know, there are in the Gitxsan culture, you know, women can be chiefs, and you know, it's a matrilineal society, so women have a very prominent role in the decision making and the process of the community. And so within our dance family, there isn't really a role for women or men. It's a very non-gendered approach to the dance practice.
Yeah, I think that's very timely and very needed for people to look at that as a model for other communities, or just in the way we build the country. Oh, I so appreciate you spending time to talk with us and help us to have understanding. It sounds like there are so many, many, many things happening. Now I could feel a way of coming in, settling down, watching what's happening, maybe getting an instrument or something so I could participate in what's happening. But I want to thank you for spending time at such a busy time in your lives with us at the Sulau Show, S-U-L-U-A-U, a show where my guest and I speak up so that our audience could listen up and act upon what we've heard. And so what we want you to act upon now is coming to the festival on March and staying or doing something every day through the 9th. I'm Charlotte Farrell, and when people ask me what time it is, I say it's always love time, poem time.
Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Love time, poem time. Time for words from heaven to shine. Love time, poem time. Time for words to pattern and rhyme. Love time, poem time. Time for words to wash the wounds, bind the lashes and play bassoon. Love time, poem time. Time for poems, poets and singers.